Dreams of animals, plants, and the natural world can be powerful. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Dream expert Robert Wagner is with us today, and we'll talk about lucid dreams that include elements of the natural world. These kinds of dreams have been valued by many cultures. We'll explore the role that dreams of nature have played in some Native American cultures and the role that these dreams might play in your life today. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Lucid dreams of animals, plants, and the natural world. Join the conversation after this news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest today is Robert Wagner, the author of Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. And today we're going to talk about lucid dreams of animals, plants, and nature, and the role that dreams of this kind have played in indigenous cultures and the role they might play today. You're welcome to join our conversation today at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Good morning, Robert.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And before we dive into the role that Mother Nature can play in lucid dreams, I want to make sure that we all understand the terminology that we're using today. So what exactly is lucid dreaming?
So lucid dreaming is when a person becomes consciously aware of dreaming while in the dream state. For example, they might see something so unusual or so odd in a dream that they realize, wait a second, this is a dream. I'm dreaming this. And so once you're lucid, you can consciously direct the dream. You can decide what you want to do. You can experiment and all that sort of thing. But I do want to welcome regular dreams as well, since I know people oftentimes want to call in and discuss their regular dreams.
I think a lot of us have experienced lucid dreams occasionally. It's not something that just happens a lot to most of us. But this is something that you can actually, a state you can get yourself into?
Right. It's been scientifically proven since 1980 in dream sleep labs at Stanford University. Stephen LaBerge proved that lucid dreaming, becoming consciously aware in the dream state, could occur. So it is something that you can learn to do. I taught myself how to do it when I was a junior in high school, and it's something that many people report when they do scientific studies of college students now and ask them, have you ever become consciously aware in the dream state? Normally, about 60 to 70% of college students say that at least once they've become consciously aware in the dream state and realize they were dreaming.
Well, let's talk about the subject at hand today, talking about the role that animals, plants, and nature can play in these dreams. And this is something that has been important in many indigenous cultures around the world, historically speaking. Can you give me a little bit of background?
Right. I was recently at the International Association for the Study of Dreams annual conference. This year it was in Asheville, North Carolina. And one of the speakers was a professor of religion at the College of Charleston, Lee Irwin. He wrote the book, The Dream Seekers, Native American Visionary Traditions of the Great Plains. And that book has a foreword by a gentleman, Vine Deloria Jr. And interesting, as I began to read books by Vine Deloria Jr., I realized that he had graduated from Iowa State back in 1958. He came from the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation near Pine Ridge, South Dakota. And he, too, had a very deep interest in the Native American, the Plains culture, and their use of dreams to explore waking reality and also to understand the unconscious. But some of the ways that the Native peoples use dreaming, they saw it in certain terms as symbolic. For example, there's reports of the Oto Iowa tribes and the Blackfeet tribes. If they saw a rattlesnake in their dream coming towards the village, then they thought that possibly the enemy was going to attack. So they used it in a symbolic sense, but also they found very practical uses for dreaming. Because in many of the Native dream reports, an animal might appear and proclaim to the dreamer that they were going to teach it something, teach the person something, or give it a special power, a power of healing or something like that. So Native American traditions worked with dreams in a very unique and interesting way, and they took that unconscious knowledge and brought it into the tribe, brought it into their personal life, and verified it, validated it, and used it in their waking reality.
When we're talking about these traditions, of course, a lot of the history that you're drawing on is a long time ago, and a lot of it was oral history. How do you know that we're talking about dreams or lucid dreams as opposed to hallucinations? I know that many indigenous cultures used hallucination as a tool to further information as well.
Right. In some of the reports, it's obvious. The report of the dreamer says that it's occurring at night, that it was a dream. But you're right. In other reports, the person states that it was a vision, that it happened while they were fasting, while they were on a vision quest. And so oftentimes a vision would be a visual activity or something that would occur during the waking state. So you're right. In certain times, you have to be a little bit careful. You can't tell if they're talking about a night dream or kind of a daydream, a vision.
You mentioned dream verification. What do you mean by that?
Right. So in Native cultures, they normally used verification to validate the veracity of a dream, the importance of a dream. So, for example, if somebody dreamt that they were approached by an animal and the animal told them that they were going to show them a plant that would help with healing and showed them the root of the plant and how the plant could be used to help with healing, well, then upon waking, they had to verify that this was the case. So without that verification, a person would lose respect in the community. I think we have an audio clip that talks a little bit about this. This is Vine Deloria, who was talking about dream verification as a necessity in Native cultures to show the value of dreaming.
All right, that's coming up in just a second.
Okay. Now, what you find in all these Indian traditions, if you have a vision or a hunch or any kind of song or dream, you have to go out and perform it in front of the community. And that's the difference between Indian religions and a lot of other religions. The other religions, you have a sudden insight, but you don't necessarily have to demonstrate that you have thereby gained access to the great mysterious energy and have powers to do new things.
So I think the important point there is just that. If you have a dream, if you think it has power, if it has validity, then you have to demonstrate it. And if you fail, well, then you lose respect in the tribe, you lose respect in the community, and people are less likely to trust the veracity of your dreams thereafter.
Why do you single out dreams about Mother Nature as opposed to other kinds of lucid dreams?
Well, the interesting thing about dreams of nature is that they show up, I believe, less frequently in the current culture than I believe in other cultures. And so that's why I pull them out a little bit, is you realize that other cultures who relied on a direct interface with nature more prominently dreamt of this more often. When I started to think, when was the last time I dreamt of an animal? You know, I had to think a few weeks ago when I dreamt of an animal. So you realize how important it was in other cultures for them to continue on with their life and succeed at living.
If you've had a dream that nature played an important role in, whether it was an animal or a plant or any kind of a natural setting, and you'd like to share it, give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, and you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You said you had to think a few weeks back, and most of us can't remember dreams more than a couple of days back. How do you keep track of your dreams?
I've taught myself to keep track of my dreams. I keep a dream journal there by my bed. And so when I wake up naturally at night, I'll jot down a few notes. And then in the morning, I'll transcribe the dream. So it's one of those things you have to basically value dreaming in order to remember your dreams.
Can you give us an example of a dream that you've had that nature played an important role in?
Well, you know, I remember as a child one time dreaming that a meadowlark landed on my chest and sang me its song. And I learned the song in the dream, and I woke up singing the song. And I could keep singing the song for the next hour or two, but then I forgot to write it down, and I can't remember the song that the meadowlark sang to me. But it reminded me of many Native peoples would also learn songs or dances in the dream state, and they would have that come to them. It's interesting, a scientist, Bob Vandecastle, who's a professor at the University of Virginia, a retired professor, he did a study of dreaming in children. And so he got 721 children from age 4 to 16 and collected their dream samples. And what he found was that 4- and 5-year-old children, in almost 40% of their dream reports, included an animal. But this steadily dropped until you got to the 14- and 16-year-olds, who in their dream reports, only 13% of the dreams had animals. So animals are very prominent in our early dreaming, but seem to be reduced in prominence as we age.
Why do you think that is?
Well, some people would say that animals represent instinctual energies or kind of native powers that we have in our subconscious, unconscious mind. And so therefore, a child who's in some sense coming from the unconscious or learning to deal with instincts and all and master them is more likely to recall animalistic energies, kind of these innate powers. But some of it might be that just as we get older, our interactions with animals is less. One thing I notice when you look at childhood videos, Hollywood produces a lot of videos focus at children, and many of them use animals as the main characters. So frequently we'll see Hollywood uses this somehow and brings animals into their consciousness.
Well, it would be interesting to be able to look at that over time as well, as humans have separated themselves more from nature, especially as we get older. It would be interesting to know if that had changed over time. Maybe we'll someday have that kind of information. We are talking today about lucid dreams of animals, plants, and nature, and the role dreams of this kind have played in indigenous cultures and can play in your life today. Robert Wagner is my guest. He's the author of Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. And if you have a dream you'd like to share or a question you'd like to ask, give us a call at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and with me today is Robert Wagner. He's the author of Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. And today we're talking about lucid dreams of animals, plants, and nature, and the role that those dreams have played in indigenous cultures, the role that those dreams may be playing in your life today. And Emily is on the line now from Cedar Falls. Hello, Emily.
Yeah.
Hi there. What would you like to talk about?
I have just had recurring dreams for the last several years of tornadoes. And I have an idea what that could mean, but I just am wondering what his input would be.
Can you give us an example of one of the dreams?
It's like I am with my family, kids, and will be, you know, watching a tornado come in the horizon, but we aren't affected by it necessarily, but we're just preparing for it as it's coming.
Right, right. So I think for many of us who grew up in the plains, tornadoes are a fairly common dream symbol. Oftentimes when we think of tornadoes, the defining characteristic that come to mind is sudden change or possibly a threat. And so frequently, dream interpreters, they try to bridge that dream, that defining characteristic of what a tornado means to you, to what's going on in your current life. So you'd ask yourself, what's happening in my current life that feels threatening? Or what's going on in my current life where I feel that sudden change is going to occur? And then you might start to realize how it relates back possibly to the family situation, but possibly to other things that are going on. But those are the kind of questions that I'd ask myself if I had that kind of dream.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot for your call, Emily. And Robert, when you have a recurring anxiety dream, is that something that if you can become lucid in that dream, is there a lucid dreaming tool that you can use to work through that anxiety?
Right. Some people who have recurrent nightmares or who have post-traumatic stress disorder, their psychologists teach them how to become consciously aware in the dream state. Because once you can become consciously aware in that recurring nightmare scenario and confront the nightmarish figure or the event, normally after that, you'll never have that nightmare again. So people learn how to become consciously aware when that nightmare occurs in order to basically conquer the nightmare.
Jennifer is on the line next in Iowa City. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, this, I guess, connects the last couple of points you were talking about. What you said struck home for me because when I was an adult, animals started getting back into my dreams because of being in East Africa on a number of safaris.
Right.
And I was having these experiences, you know, in my waking life where I was become, you know, very fearful of the animals, very aware of them. There was one point where hyenas came into our camp one night, and I don't think I've ever been so afraid of animals, not since I was a kid. And then there was maybe 2 years after that point where animals were in my dreams in a much more vivid way than I ever remembered, and it disappeared from my dream life. But I think the combination of experience, visceral experience and fear created the perfect conditions for that to happen.
And the animals were menacing in your dreams?
Well, not necessarily nightmarish figures, but a presence to be reckoned with. Family members turned into lions. My husband turned into a lion. So it was very interesting. It was something to be reckoned with, a force. And, you know, not to be trifled with in a way.
Right. That's very fascinating. It's interesting when you look at Native American traditions because they're so deeply involved in the natural world. Oftentimes they would have an animal come to them in a dream to give them knowledge or give them power or give them some insight. And then in the dream, the animal would turn into a human form. And so it's interesting in your case that the family member, the husband, would turn into a lion and kind of possibly show those lion characteristics.
Absolutely. Right. The animal is talking and kind of moving in between human and animal state. It was fascinating, but I never really thought about it very, very deeply. So I appreciate your comments.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot for your call, Jennifer.
Thanks.
And we were having a little bit of trouble with the phones earlier, but that has been taken care of. So if you tried to call a few minutes ago, try again. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Kathy is on the line from Jefferson. Hello, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Your last caller only heard part of what she said, but it too pertains to a dream I had years ago. My father was a semi-invalid, 96 years old, and I had moved into a new house here in Jefferson, and he had never been over to see the house. And my sister and brother-in-law were visiting, and we arranged for his caregiver, the brother and sister and brother-in-law, to come so Dad could see my house, and I was to fix a nice meal. And, of course, I was a little uptight about this. My dad was somewhat judgmental with a good meal, so I wanted everything to go well. And the night before, I had a dream that I was in my kitchen and kept stumbling over a huge tiger and two small tigers that were just laying around on my kitchen floor. And right away when I woke up, I knew what that dream meant. And I've often thought the dreams carry the best metaphors. And so that's my little story about a dream.
Oh, great. Thanks for calling, Kathy. You know, dreams do have a metaphoric language. The tiger obviously meant something to you, and you immediately understood it, and it had value for you. I remember there was a psychologist, Paul Tholey, who investigated lucid dreaming, becoming consciously aware. And he had a recurring nightmare of being chased by a tiger. And so finally he became consciously aware in the dream state and asked the tiger, "Who are you? Why are you in my dream?" And the tiger responded to him, "I am your father, and I am here to tell you what to do." And so he began to have a conversation in the dream with the tiger, who was the representation of his father. And he said by the end of it, he realized that the tiger actually had some good points, and maybe he should change his behavior and way of thinking. So it's interesting how that tiger imagery showed up.
Well, Kathy, thank you so much for your call. And I think we have time for one more call before we get to our break here, but we will take other calls after we get back. Stephanie's on the line from Waukee. Hello, Stephanie.
Hi. I have a dream about a couple of different animals, actually. I had a dream that I was at a lake that I frequented when I was in college, and I was watching some eagles, and they came down and actually started to attack me, and I ran from them, and then they kind of morphed into like a dog, tiger kind of animal, which I thought was strange because for me, I've always loved eagles. My dad loved eagles, so we always had pictures of them and statues of them in the house. So I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Yes, it's a little bit hard to know exactly, but it may relate to something going on in the house. If this was a symbol that you frequently had in the house, and maybe some sort of energy. You know, it's a little bit hard to tell, but that's an interesting transformation from a seagull to menacing dogs and tigers.
Thanks a lot for your call, Stephanie. It's interesting that so many of our callers have been talking about animals in an aggressive or fearful kind of dream.
Right. You know, we realize, I think as we grow and we live in our houses and get a little bit more separated from nature, that oftentimes the dreams do show more aggression than other factors. But that's something that you really don't see in the Native American culture. More often the animals were to bring a gift or to provide information or to give knowledge. And those were the kind of interactions that they seem to have more often.
Well, I wonder if that's something that may be symptomatic, again, of people being more divided from nature today, that nature is taking on a menacing form in their subconscious.
That very well might be the case. And also just that we have a greater separation in many respects from the native world, so that we feel less comfortable in the native world, even though it is our world.
My guest today is Robert Wagner. He's the author of Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. And we would love to hear from you with the dreams that you've had that nature has played an important role in. And you can give us a call at 866-780-9100, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPRTalk. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and with me today is Robert Wagner. He's the author of Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. And today we're talking about the role that nature, animals, plants, and other natural settings play in dreams historically, in indigenous cultures, and of course in your dreams today. If you have a story that you'd like to share, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next up, we have Jim on the line in Iowa City. Hello, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you? What would you like to talk about?
I've got a weird recurring motif or theme in a dream, and it's not always the same fish, but it's the same situation where a fish will jump out of an aquarium and it flops around on the floor. And I can't seem to figure out if there's any, if it occurs at certain times, in certain dreams, but it's there quite often. So
right,
I throw that out there.
You know, Jim, thanks very much for calling, because I was hoping someone would bring up a dream like this. Oftentimes, we'll find animals appear in our dreams as a type of pun. For example, we use the word like horsing around or being badgered, or someone outfoxes us. So sometimes we have used animals as kind of having certain characteristics. Now, if this was my dream, and it's not, it's your dream, but if this was my dream, the first thing that would come to me if I saw a recurring dream of a fish jumping out of an aquarium is I would ask myself, what's going on in my life where I feel like a fish out of water? Because that's something that you see in this dream, is this poor little fish is jumping out of the aquarium and flopping around on the ground. So it may be that this relates to that kind of literary pun of being a fish out of water.
Does that resonate with you, Jim?
Definitely. I'm a big believer in dream metaphors. So it's one that I hadn't really thought about until this show. So thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot for your call, Jim. You know, it's interesting. Again, we've been hearing from a lot of callers that have been talking about animals appearing in their dreams in an aggressive way or a frightening way. One of the ways that animals appear in my dreams frequently is I spend a lot of time with dogs and cats and many other animals, and I spend a lot of time in nature. But what I find is that in my dreams, many of my pets will be in my dreams, and I can communicate with them using human language, so I can communicate with them more clearly than I can in real life.
Right, and that's one of the interesting things that Bob Vandecastle found in his study, that the dream of children, that the animals at the 4 to 5 year period were just animals you might find in the natural environment, but the dreams of the 14, 15, 16-year-olds were more often dreams of domesticated animals, and oftentimes their pets. And so it'd be interesting to hear people who've actually had conversations with their pets in the dream state. I know that I have. I was really shocked the first time our oldest cat came to me in a dream and told me what it wanted. And I was so shocked when I woke up that morning to think that the cat had come to me and told me what it needed. Then it surprised me another time it came and told me how it wanted to be held. Previously, when you'd pick up the cat, it would fight you and you'd have to drop it. And in the dream, it showed me how it wanted to be held. And when I woke up and put the cat in that position, it stood in my arms just perfectly still and happy. So it's curious when you get those animal communications and have that experience of talking to your pets.
So you really believe that that was a communication between you and your cat?
Well, it's interesting how a person could think of it. It might be that that's the explanation, or it might be that unconsciously or subconsciously I realized in my previous attempts to try and hold it that at certain ways it was less wiggly than other ways. And so at a subconscious level, I began to realize how the cat wanted to be held.
You had an epiphany. All right. Next up, we have Brenda on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hello, Brenda.
Hi. You can hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Well, I wanted to tell you that for years I would have horrible night terrors, and I'd wake up in a dead panic. And the dream was that I was in a car driving, and there were plants and animals, you know, whizzing by, and I'm going really fast, and I'm just ready to crash into a wall. And then I got diagnosed with celiac, and then I've been kind of still having stomach problems. And so then I read this Elaine Gottschall's book, Breaking the Vicious Cycle, and she talks about some people can't break down double sugars like disaccharides. And so I tried the diet for just monosaccharides. And then my nightmares went away. And then if I accidentally, you know, eat something that has the disaccharides, then my nightmares are right back. And the way she explains it from the research And she refers also back to Dr. Haas, who developed or, you know, did all the research on celiac, but that they use this for, like, autistic kids and other, you know, other people with stomach problems and colitis and stuff. But that they said that certain bacteria will grow off of the food that's left in your stomach that ferments, that if you can't break it down.
And you think that's causing you to have nightmares?
Yeah, it produces the toxins that cause nightmares.
Interesting.
And you know, there's a bunch of people, I guess, you know, before me that, you know, noticed this along with, you know,
right.
like stomach gas and pain. I didn't know if you'd heard much about this because I had never heard of it before until I kind of...
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that actually there's some very talented dreamers who pay attention to how food shows up in the dream state, and they'll use that as kind of a guide to what they eat. For example, if they had a dream where a candy bar fell into the dirt, that would be a negative association with that type of candy bar, and so they'd avoid that in the future. Or if they saw a feast situation in a dream where everyone was eating green beans, then they'd try to bring more of that into their diet. I have had some friends who are lucid dreamers who become consciously aware, and they've asked the dream to show them what foods would be best for them at that time. And then normally they'll see a banquet of all different types of food, and they'll realize that these foods are probably the ones that will assist them the most. But Brenda, thanks very much for your call.
We have Jan on the line next from Iowa City. Hello, Jan.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to share?
Well, I had an interesting set of dreams that related to bulls. Can you hear me?
Yes.
And one was black, and one night I dreamed about a black bull, and just standing in a field, not aggressive or anything, and then I would dream about a white bull that was dressed up, like adorned with jewels and beautiful colors, and I just wondered if there was some kind of symbolism associated with bulls in dreaming.
You know, I'm going to focus on the color aspect of the dream. There's someone who's in the International Association for the Study of Dreams who did his master thesis on color in dreams. His name is Bob Haas. And so if you Google Bob Haas and dreams, you'll get to his page where he talks about color in dreams. And oftentimes he found in his studies that black was oftentimes associated with the unconscious, with death, with night. He gives a whole long list. And then white oftentimes was associated with newness or purity or those kind of things. It's interesting that the mother of Buddha had a conception dream of the Buddha. And the conception dream was that a white elephant came into her in the dream. And the white elephant was carrying a lotus flower. And she was the woman who gave birth to the Buddha. But it's a little bit hard to know exactly. It'd be one of these dreams where I'd have to sit down with somebody and really talk to them to understand what a bull meant to them. Because a bull might mean something different if you grew up on a farm or if you didn't grow up on a farm. And a person would have to find out what are the defining characteristics of a bull to a person who dreams of a bull. But thanks so much for the call.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call, Jan. And if you have a dream that you'd like to share, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Steve is on the line now from Iowa City. Hello, Steve.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I was very interested in the animal imagery dreams that people were talking about. I've only ever actually had one animal dream. It wasn't aggressive at all. It was actually a really wonderful dream, and I was actually a mountain lion out in the woods hunting at night. I believe I actually took down a deer and fed on it, and that's all I remember of the dream. But it was quite a powerful dream that I've never forgotten. and I just wondered what Robert had to say about that.
Well, you know, it's very fascinating. When I was reading about this in the books, The Dream Seekers by Lee Irwin and the book by Vine Deloria, The World We Used to Live In, oftentimes he'd talk about Native people relating dreams in which they became the animal. And it's not like they had wings on their arms or something like that, but they physically felt like they became the animal in the dream state. I know I've had a dream very similar in which I was either like a dog or a coyote walking down the night street, and it was so odd to actually feel that kind of body of a dog and feel my tongue hanging out and drooping along. But it seems interesting that we have that capability of experiencing the animal from within the animal. I believe Carl Jung, who came up with the idea of the collective unconscious, would try to explain it as some sort of knowledge that we have biologically based within us after millions of years of evolution. But in any case, it's a fascinating dream to experience what it might be to be a mountain lion hunting at night and taking down a dream. What's curious is some people actually find out after these dreams, they'll find out some characteristic of that animal and they'll investigate it and realize that the animal had that characteristic. So thanks very much for the call, Steve.
Steve, have you felt a special connection with mountain lions since then?
Yes and no. I mean, I've been interested that they're coming back to Iowa. I've never seen one in person. But I have been interested in them ever since. And as I said, I've never forgotten that dream. It was a wonderful dream.
All right. Thank you so much for your call today, Steve.
Thank you.
We do still have time for a few more calls this hour. The number is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My guest today is Robert Wagner. We're talking about dreams and lucid dreaming, specifically of nature, of animals and plants and other natural settings. The number again is 866-780-9100. And we got an email from Chris, who said, I've had many dreams that have stayed with me longer than real events in that time of my life. 20 years ago, I had a dream about my boss having pets that were my coworkers. I remember more about his personal presence in that dream than anything he ever really said to me. This dream gave me a roadmap to deal with him, and I wouldn't have been able to stay at that job or been successful at that workplace had it not been for the dream. He also mentions that as he gets older, he doesn't remember his dreams as well and wishes he could change that.
Right. I think it's just a matter of valuing your dreams. Sometimes I encourage people before they go to sleep to tell themselves, tonight I'll remember my most important dream easily in the morning. And frequently, if you value your dreams before going to sleep, you'll remember them easily.
It's interesting that he writes that dream gave him a pathway to deal with his boss. I guess that could be more of the dream as metaphor.
Right. Oftentimes dream gives us, using animals, gives us insight into the characteristic of the people around us, or possibly in this particular situation where the boss is treating the coworkers as pets, if I understand correctly, mm-hmm. Shows kind of the relationship that the boss has with the coworkers. But in any case, it's great that it helped Chris and gave him or her some insight into their experience.
Laura is on the line from Story County. Hello, Laura.
Hi.
What would you like to talk about?
Well, I decided to call, even though I feel like this is like a really weird example, because I think in our mainstream culture, we don't talk as much about how dreams can affect our lives, or we don't take that very seriously. But I decided to take a risk because I was hearing lots of interesting stories.
Well, I'm glad you decided to call. Tell us about your dream.
Well, many years ago, when I was a young woman, I was in an oppressive relationship. And I sort of knew it was coming and I was needing to change. And I had a series of dreams that involved raccoons. And it was things about feeding their young, protecting their young, creating a good environment for their young. And I was in a relationship that was not 100% safe, and I was pregnant, and I sort of knew something had to happen. But I kept having these dreams, and then, and actually nothing violent had happened at that point in time. It was just indicators that things weren't going well and could lead to that. So I had all these dreams about mother raccoons protecting her children and so forth. And I then had a real life, and when I was journaling these dreams and I was paying attention to them, and then I had a real life experience where my former spouse actually attempted violence towards me, and I felt myself, this is when I'm awake, I felt myself, my face changed, my mouth changed, I just felt these changes, and I bit him so that I could get away. I bit the man so that I could get away. And I knew that I was being a raccoon. And I know that sounds crazy in U.S. culture, but hey, I'm sharing it because I do think that this is powerful stuff that we could be more aware of and use the information of dreams to have better lives and make decisions. This was a really important decision, and I ended up getting away and having a safe environment for raising my child. So it was awesome.
Right. I'm glad that Laura called, because this is a common theme in many of the Native American dreams that I saw, that the person would dream of a certain animal. The animal would come to it repeatedly and basically adopt the person or share a kinship with the person. And in a sense, they began to identify with that animal. They felt like they had the power and the knowledge and the characteristics of that animal, and it helped them throughout their lives. At least that's how it occurred in the Native traditions. But I'm glad to hear that Laura used that kind of energy and subconsciously recognized what was going on in order to make a better life for herself.
It was really, really amazing. And I actually, after I made that decision, I had a real-life raccoon experience where I saw a mother raccoon with three babies, and it was just a wonderfully moving thing. And so, yes, white European girls can have these types of dreams and experiences too.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for your call, and I'm so glad that you got safe and your child was safe as well. Thanks a lot. We have Chol on the line. I hope I said that correctly, from Des Moines. Hello.
Hello there. How you doing?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, like I was just saying, that I was born and raised in southern Sudan, and I come from a tribe called Dinka. Excuse me. And in my hometown, we have a belief that we come from anaconda, or we're related to anaconda. And I keep having these dreams about anacondas and snakes where I live among them. But in real life, I'm actually afraid of them. So I never really understood the source of that dream.
Right. It's interesting to see how the culture that we grow up in influences the type of dream we have and the meaning of the dream for us. In a sense, again, I'm not saying that I understand your dream and I'm not interpreting your dream, but if I dreamt of a culturally significant item like this, that my culture came from the anaconda and I kept dreaming of that, it would seem to me that in my waking life, I'm probably dealing with issues of culture. Who am I in this culture? How does my culture relate to this culture? And trying to work out issues of culture. But from the Native American viewpoint, it's interesting that dreaming of things under the ground, things like snake and certain water spirits, was a very powerful type of dream that they frequently had and discussed.
Chol, did you just start having these dreams after you came to the United States, or did you dream about anaconda when you were a child as well?
No, actually, they became more frequent after I came to the United States. But actually, in the Dinka culture, whenever a person dreams of a snake, that means, you know, there's going to be a death in family, you know, but which is really weird. It's very different, you know.
Right, right. So, in any case, our culture and our dreams change as our cultures change, but they definitely give us food for thought.
Well, thank you so much for your call today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And I think we have time for one more call. This is Judy in Waterloo. And Robert Wagner, I'm not sure this is a subject you're going to know about, but let's give this a try. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
What would you like to ask?
I am just wondering, I would like to be having any one of those dreams I've heard, excuse me, your people talk about. But I'm wondering, can medication, in particular antidepressants, can they do something as far as keeping you from having any kind of dreams?
You know, this is something that many people have reported, that certain types of medications, certain beta blockers and other things actually affect people's dream recall significantly. And then there's certain medications that will increase your dream recall. So in any case, this would be something good to get on the internet and look into, or possibly call Dr. Daikin.
All right, Judy, thank you so much for your call. And Robert, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thanks, Charity.
Robert Wagner is the author of Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Technical support today from Joshua Cicida in Ames. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at all times at iowapublicradio.org. And we'd love to hear from you. Our email is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, we'll talk about art museums. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.